Thank you for joining us for the University of Illinois Press podcast. I am your host, Elizabeth Hess. I am joined today by a Robert A. Woods Professor of Economics, Dr. Andrew Zimbalist of Smith College. Recently, Dr. Zimbalist contributed to the Journal of Olympic Studies, weighing in on the economic impact of the upcoming Olympic Games and how COVID-19 has impacted how future Olympic Games will be planned. Tokyo 2020 and its postponement, an economic prognosis, will appear in the spring edition of the Journal of Olympic Studies. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Zimbalist.
My pleasure.
First, let's begin with a little bit of your personal history. What drew you to the concept of the economic impact of sports and specifically the Olympic Games?
This is a long story. I promise not to take more than 4 hours telling you it, but I had spent the first part of my academic career studying economic development, mostly in Latin America, but in other continents as well. Back in 1990, I was putting my then 11-year-old son to bed. I was looking at his walls, which were plastered with baseball cards. And out of the blue, he said to me, "Hey, Dad, you're an economist. You like baseball. Why don't you write a book on the economics of baseball?" And I did. And it turned out to be a business bestseller and was very successful. And I started getting asked to do more things on sports economics. Eventually, I turned to the question of the economic impact of sports teams and sports stadiums on their communities. And in the early 2000s, I think it was in 2004, I got a call from the Schubert Theater Corporation in New York. They were very concerned about plans that New York City had to host the Olympic Games or to bid to host the Olympic Games for 2012. And the Schubert Theater Corporation, which owned several theaters, Broadway theaters, was mainly concerned that if the Olympics were held, that kind of congestion and traffic jams that would ensue would make it very difficult for a period of a month and a half, basically, for Broadway to attract theatergoers. And they're also concerned that the initial plans for the Olympic Stadium that was going to be built between 33rd and 35th Street on 11th Avenue, that after the Olympics, that stadium was to be used for the New York Jet football team, mostly on Sunday afternoons, and that would wipe out the ability to have Sunday matinees. So they asked me to look into the economics of how it would impact the city of New York if, in fact, the games were held in New York in 2012. So I looked into it and found that as I was pursuing the matter, the economic impact would not be positive for New York and would have a lot of detrimental impacts, including on Broadway. And from there, I had a curiosity about how the Olympics worked out for other cities. And I just began to study that and began to write about it and do some consulting around it. And one thing led to another. That's basically how I got here.
The first modern Olympics took place in 1896 and have only been canceled a total of 5 times. No modern Olympics, summer or winter, have ever been canceled due to a pandemic. What would a cancellation of the 2021 Games, who would that impact the most severely?
We have to remember that the decision to postpone the Games was made at the end of March of 2020. And at that point in time, Tokyo and Japan had basically made all of the investments they had to make. And according to various government studies, the total amount of spending was somewhere in the order of $30 billion. So all of that money was already water under the dam. And if there were no Olympic Games held, then of course, a lot of that money would go to waste because a large part of the expenditures had to do strictly with what was going to happen during the Games that was supposed to happen this summer, 2020. Obviously, the Japanese government would lose a lot of the money that they had put into it. Some of the money, to be fair, some of the money was for infrastructure that would have some ongoing use, but most of it was not in that category. I think, frankly, that the largest losers, if there was a cancellation of the Games, though, wouldn't be the Japanese government. It would be the athletes who train most of their lives on a very rigorous schedule, day after day, to participate and compete in the Olympics. They would be deprived of that opportunity. The fact of the matter is that there are very few games in the history of the Olympics that one can make a solid argument that were positive for the local city economy. And so even though the Japanese government would have made a lot of investments that were never used for the Olympics, if the Olympics are held, it doesn't mean that those investments would have created some great economic effects. In fact, there's a lot of evidence now, particularly in recent games, that suggests that Olympic host cities don't increase the amount of tourism from hosting the games. A lot of tourists stay away. A lot of tourists will say, gee, I do want to visit Tokyo one day, and I was thinking of going next summer, But I'm not going to go next summer because I know that Tokyo is going to be a madhouse when I go. Hotels will be hard to find hotel rooms. Hotel prices will probably be jacked up. The congestion on the streets, the travel from Narita Airport to downtown will take me 4 hours instead of taking me 2 hours. And there might be security incidents. So I don't want to go to Tokyo. And that means that when Tokyo does host the games this coming summer, if in fact foreign fans are allowed to attend the games, it's not clear that there would be an increase in tourism. Pushing the pandemic influence aside for the moment, there's no clear evidence that the number who come, the number of Olympic fans who will come to Tokyo, would be greater than the number of tourists who decide not to go to Tokyo. And for that reason, the whole expectation and all of the hype around, oh, let's host the games, it'll be great for our economy. On the one hand, you get tourism, they argue. On the other hand, we'll put Tokyo on the world stage, which is kind of a silly idea, just as it's silly to suggest that in 2028, Los Angeles will be on the world stage because it's hosting the Olympics. Everybody who has the wherewithal and the interest in traveling to Los Angeles will already have known about Los Angeles, whether or not they host the Olympics in 2028. A lot of the positive stuff that's supposed to happen really doesn't happen. And it's not, as a general matter, it's not an economic boon for a city to make those investments. And there's a situation like Tokyo where they've invested $30 billion and they're only going to have about $5 or $6 billion coming in because IOC shares some of the international television money, some of the international sponsorship money, and they earn some domestic sponsorship money. Add all that together, you get about $6 billion. Compare that to $30 billion, and how does that shake out as an economic investment? Not very well. That's something that's important to keep in mind when we start trying to say, okay, who benefits and who loses? I'm not sure that there's much benefit for Tokyo or Japan one way or the other here. They've made an enormous investment, but that investment stands whether or not the Olympics would actually be canceled. So I think the real losers here are the athletes.
Alternatively, if the 2021 Games are canceled, who of this group will be better positioned for recovery?
The athletes are always positioned for recovery. However, they lose 4 years of competitive period in their life. A lot of athletes who would compete in 2021 would be 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. They'll be able to compete again, depending on the sport. They'll be able to compete again 4 years later. So most of them will be able to recover. On the other hand, those athletes who are towards the end of their Olympic years, who are now 28, 29, 30, or even older, they're going to have a very, very hard time and they won't be able to recuperate.
Your article discusses the Tokyo corruption scandal involving the head of the Japanese Olympic Committee. There were ongoing concerns about the nuclear catastrophe. There are concerns about the intense heat waves that could threaten athletes and spectators. For Tokyo, do you think hosting the Games is a sensible undertaking?
Unfortunately, I don't think it ever was. As you suggest, the head of the Tokyo Organizing Committee, Mr. Takeda, who's also the head of the Tokyo, or was the head of the Tokyo Olympic Committee, seems to have been involved in providing a bribe of $2.3 million to some IOC members, International Olympic Committee members from Africa, in order to vote for and to get some of their colleagues to vote for Tokyo to be the hosts in 2020. Tokyo had hosted the Games in 1964. At that point in time, Japan was in the middle of a big economic boom. Japan had been associated, of course, with the Axis powers in World War II. It wasn't really accepted as a member of the world capitalist community of nations. And it was important for Japan in 64 to spend more money in developing their infrastructure to complement the economic growth that had started in Japan. It was important for Japan to let the world know that there was this country out there that wanted to be cooperative and peaceful and had all of these wonderful attractions. And so the 1964 Olympics played a particular historical role in Japan. I think that the Japanese government and some of the Japanese people felt similarly about the ability to host the Games in 2020, namely that Japan, after having a miraculous growth spurt between 1955 and 1990, basically has entered into a period of 30 years of economic stagnation, very, very, very slow growth. They also suffered, most of the world knows that they suffered back in 2011, the Fukushima nuclear disaster, which kind of wiped out a big region of the country for inhabitation. And they were very anxious, Japan was anxious to have the same kind of public relations effect from hosting the Games in 2020 that they had back in 1964. This was going to relaunch Tokyo and Japan as a positive image in the world. And would have that have happened? It's hard to believe that it would have had that role. But certainly now, with the corruption scandal, with the fact that the evidence has come out that they've been spending $30 billion on this event that's going to have a much, much smaller economic effect, I think it's pretty clear that the Japanese people and most people in the Japanese government who aren't directly associated with the Olympics would say to you in hindsight, gee, we never should have done this.
Let's talk about what you refer to as the morphing budget. You detail how the bid for the 2020 Games went from $7.43 billion in 2013 to $13.4 billion in December of 2016. Then the fourth and what you refer to as what was intended to be the final budget was $12.6 billion. How common is the morphing budget scenario?
It's pretty common. Basically, the IOC is concerned that if you put out the information that in order to host the games, it's going to cost your city or your country $30 billion, that nobody will ever want to host the games again. And so what the IOC does is they construct certain budgetary rules that says, we don't want you to count this and we don't want you to count that. You can't count this. And what are they saying you can't count? They're saying don't count most of the infrastructure investment. Don't count it if there's some private investment in the Olympic Village. Don't count the design costs, don't count the renovation costs of existing facilities, don't count all sorts of things. And don't count the fact that the IOC requires the government not to charge any sales taxes or income taxes on activity related to the Olympic Games, and hence loses a lot of money that would otherwise come in. When they create these budget rules, you can take a $30 billion cost and knock it down as far as you want to. And that's exactly what happened. When the current governor of Tokyo, Yuriko Koike, came in, she commissioned a study that came out in April of 2016. And the study was to look at what it was actually going to cost the government, because the government noticed that the costs, the prices were inflating and inflating way above that initial budgetary line that they provided when they applied for hosting the games, just a little over $7 billion. She noticed it was going higher and higher. So she commissioned this study, and the commission came out with a report that said, it looks like we're on track to spend $27 to $30 billion on this. When the IOC heard that information, they sent their vice president, John Coates, to Tokyo to explain to the Tokyo Olympic Committee that they can't be putting out figures like that. They said, we insist that you lower your budget. We want the budget to go down below $20 billion. And they came out with a new budget. And the way they came out with a new budget is just by wiping things off of the old budget. They didn't actually change anything. They just didn't count certain things. And now the new budget was between $15 and $16.5 billion. The IOC still wasn't satisfied. And they said, it's got to go down lower. And so one of the things that the Tokyo Olympic Committee did is they took out the contingency part of the budget. It had a range of about $1.6 to around $3 billion. And that's very peculiar to take out a contingency in a construction project of that magnitude when you typically get, in the Olympic Games, you get cost overruns of 2 and 3 times the initial estimates. Why would you say, well, we don't need a contingency budget? You always have contingencies in large construction projects. And they just simply wiped it out. And then the other thing they did is they took a security budget that was over $2 billion and knocked it down to about $1 billion. So at the end of the day, they came out with a budget. This is the last budget they came out with. It was from December of 2019. The budget was now $12.6 billion. But of course, the reality never changed. And so the government did an audit. As far as we can tell, it's a $30 billion expense. But the IOC likes to put out the propaganda that, no, it's a $12.6 billion budget.
Dr. Zimbalist, let's pivot to COVID. As stated in your article, in the most optimistic scenario, an effective vaccine is developed, approved, and widely available by early summer 2021, and the games with their 11,000 athletes and full fan attendance go forward. In this case, the revenue losses from postponement should be negligible. How optimistic are you that this scenario will proceed?
I'm not a public health official. I'm able to read the press on vaccines. I'm able to read the press on public health measures. Japan has actually been very successful, first of all, in managing the COVID crisis. They've had very little spread relative to other countries. People there wear masks. People there do social distancing. The government is behind the coordinated effort to promote all of those things. And so they've done pretty well in tamping down the virus and also in avoiding the second round of the virus that we're experiencing in the United States and is being experienced elsewhere. And the Japanese government has also been experimenting with allowing different proportions of stadium capacity to attend sporting events, in particular their baseball season. So they've been successful in preventing the spread at sporting events and the designing of a variety of plans to allow fans to attend the Olympic Games. They still haven't decided fully whether they're going to be able to allow fans from outside of Japan to come into the country, but I suspect that they will be able to. There'll be certain testing requirements. All of that is assuming that we don't have a vaccine. We do seem to have a vaccine now from Pfizer and from other sources potentially. And the issue will be making the vaccine and then distributing the vaccine to enough people. They'll have to identify which countries have been able to effectively distribute the vaccine prior to July of 2021, prior to when the games are supposed to begin. And then I suspect design policies to allow people to come in from those countries where there's been widespread distribution of the vaccine. So I think it's still a very complex matter. We don't have any guarantees on the vaccine really at this point, although it's very encouraging. And so it seems to me likely, there's a good likelihood that A, they'll be able to have the games and be able to have them in their full variety, have all of the different Olympic medals contested for. And B, it seems likely that they'll be able to have some fans in the stands. You know, whether that'll be 20% of the capacity, 80% or 100% of the capacity, I don't have a crystal ball and I'm not sure at this point.
You do quote a July 2020 survey that only 1 in 4 Japanese citizens said they were in favor of holding the Olympics next year. Many candidates recently running in the Tokyo gubernatorial election on the pledge to cancel the games. Can you talk more about that?
There's been a lot of debate in Japan and a lot of public protest about the expense of hosting the games, and hence there's a lot more cynicism and skepticism than there had been. And when you put up the uncertain impact of holding the games up against exposing the Tokyo population to the spread of coronavirus from people coming from around the world to participate in those games, people say, if that's the choice, public health and good health versus an uncertain impact from hosting the games, people choose good health. And so that's why you get 1/4 of the people back in July saying, you know, I'm not so sure this is a good idea to go forward. If you did another survey today, I suspect that it would be more than 1/4 that would say, yes, let's go ahead with it, because they've seen that Japan has done a very good job in controlling the spread of the virus and allowing fans to attend some of the sporting events successfully. And also now they know that there's a better prospect for the vaccine providing a level of protection that they didn't know about back in July.
If the games are canceled next year, though, and let's say the vaccine falls through or something happens and COVID is not eradicated, how do you anticipate the economic impact in other countries, including the U.S.?
I don't think there's any economic impact in other countries. The way the Olympics is organized, you know, there are 206 countries that are members of the Olympics that send at least one athlete to participate and compete in the games. The travel costs for the athletic team from each country, along with the trainers and so on, people who stay ultimately in the Olympic Village in a normal circumstance, the travel costs are paid for by the host city. They're not paid for by, in the case of the U.S., by the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. They're not paid for by the National Olympic Committees of the different countries. They're paid for by the host, which is, in this case, Tokyo. If the games are canceled, it means that NBC won't be broadcasting them, but it will mean also that NBC gets to have another year of broadcasting later. Their current contract, I think, goes through 1932, and there are make-good provisions in that contract so that NBC will be able to broadcast other games at a later point in time for the money that they put into it. One could identify probably very, very small marginal effects in certain sectors, but I don't think there's anything to anticipate in terms of a noticeable effect on the U.S. economy or other countries' economies.
Before I let you go, can you talk a little bit about the third edition of your book, Circus Maximus, The Economic Gamble of Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup, which is coming out again?
Sure. Thank you for asking. I published Circus Maximus first in 2015. It was published with Brookings. Brookings decided to come out because it was successful in the first edition, come out with a second edition, a paperback edition in 2016. And I hadn't published an update of that since 2016. And Brookings wanted to, because of the demand for the book, wanted to come out with an updated version. So I updated the text throughout, and I added a new chapter about everything that had happened in the Olympic Games since 2016. And that was part of the book that actually came out in time for the games that were supposed to happen in July of this year. But it's same title, Circus Maximus, The Economic Gamble of Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup.
The latest volume of the Journal of Olympic Studies is available online at the University of Illinois Press website. Dr. Andrew Zimbalist's article, Tokyo 2020 and its Postponement and Economic Prognosis, is available in that issue. You can also look for the third edition of Dr. Zimbalist's book, Circus Maximus, The Economic Gamble of Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup. Thank you for listening to the University of Illinois Press podcast, which you can hear again through the link on the University of Illinois Press website. Dr. Andrew Zimbalist, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me with you.